This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Doe Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
The night sky, December 2013. Well, it could be a very good month. We're hoping that from about December the 3rd to about the 14th, we may have a comet, Comet Ison, shining brightly in the pre-dawn sky. More of that a bit later on. We also have Jupiter, now becoming quite prominent in the late evening and well high enough in the sky to observe. So it could in fact be a good month. What about the stars? Well, after nightfall, we have the great square of Pegasus setting towards the west. That's adjacent to the constellation of Andromeda, which of course contains the Andromeda galaxy M31. On the night sky page, I give a little star chart showing you how to find it. And if in fact you try looking around the time of new moon, then there's a chance of also spotting M33, the galaxy in Triangulum. Andromeda is the largest galaxy in our local group of galaxies. We're number 2. M33 in Triangulum is number 3. And the Large Magellanic Cloud, which sadly we can only see from the southern hemisphere, is in fact number 4. Moving across the sky, we come through Aries, not an awful lot to see there. But then, of course, Taurus will be rising with that lovely cluster, the Pleiades cluster, up at the top right. Below that is the Hyades cluster. There's an interloper there. It's Aldebaran, the bright red star that we see in the direction of the Hyades cluster. It's in fact about halfway between. And then, of course, rising low initially in the east is that lovely constellation of Orion the Hunter. The three stars that make up his belt, you can track back downwards to find Sirius, the bright star in Canis Major. And below the central star of the belt, you should hopefully see a little fuzzy glow, and with binoculars, you're actually seeing the rather lovely object, the Orion Nebula, a birthplace of stars. Up to the left of Orion, we have Gemini, the heavenly twins, Castor and Pollux. So it's actually quite a nice area of sky to look at. That region, Gemini, Orion, Taurus, is one of the most beautiful regions in the sky, and over the next few months that becomes increasingly apparent during the evening. And we shouldn't forget, of course, that looking high up and towards the north, we have Cassiopeia, the W shape, and then almost overhead we in fact have Perseus. And between Cassiopeia and Perseus we have the double cluster, a lovely object to look at with binoculars or a small telescope. So I do hope you enjoy just enjoying the night sky and the stars. Well, what about the planets? Well, Jupiter, as I mentioned, is becoming increasingly apparent. It rises about 7:30 p.m. at the beginning of December and by late evening dominates the eastern sky. It's transiting at the beginning of the month, that means it's due south, at about 3 a.m. and then it'll be about 62 degrees above the horizon, shining at magnitude -2.6 with a disk about 46 arc seconds across. Now, it's lying in the constellation of Gemini, very close, in fact, to the 3.5 magnitude star WASAT, or Delta Geminorum. Gemini is one of the highest constellations in the ecliptic, which is why Jupiter will be so high when it's due south and perfect for observing. It just doesn't get better than that, as some people say. In fact, on the 10th of December, Jupiter is just 15 arc minutes above WASAT. As the month progresses, it transits earlier, around midnight by the end of the month. There'll be lots of detail to see. With a small telescope, you can see the equatorial bands and you can observe the four Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. At appropriate times, you should be able to pick up the great red spot, visible as an indentation of the south equatorial belt. Well, Saturn. Saturn passed behind the sun in early November, which implies, of course, it's now visible in the pre-dawn sky, rising at about 5 a.m. as December begins, and by about 3:30 a.m. at his end. So it's a morning object. It's shining with a magnitude of +0.6, so it's a lot fainter than Jupiter. The disk is now about 15.5 arc seconds across. The really good news is that the rings have now opened up to about 20 degrees or so from the line of sight, so they'll present a magnificent sight. Sadly for those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, Saturn is now lying in the more southerly part of the ecliptic, so even at opposition, when it's due south at midnight, its elevation will not get that high, about 20-odd degrees. Sadly, this will get worse for quite a number of years to come. Mars was in Leo last month. It's now moved into Virgo. It rises soon after midnight, shining at magnitude plus 1.2 as December begins. During the month, its magnitude increases somewhat to plus 0.9. And at the same time, its angular size increases from 5.6 to 6.8 arc seconds. So now, given good seeing, which is the amount of turbulence in the atmosphere, it is possible to see markings on its salmon pink surface, such as the polar caps and Syrtis Major. So I think we can say that Mars's current apparition has really begun. As it moves down across Virgo, by the very end of the month, it's very close to Porrima, Gamma Virginis. What about Mercury? It's visible in the pre-dawn sky, shining at magnitude plus 0.6, down to the lower left of Saturn as December begins. It brightens to minus 0.8 magnitudes during the first couple of weeks, but each morning is a little lower above the horizon as dawn breaks, and it'll be lost from view by mid-December. It's going to pass behind the Sun on December the 29th, so it won't be visible for some time. Well, finally, Venus. It's shining at minus 4.9 as December begins. It's actually a beacon in the western sky, and I saw it as I was driving to give an astronomy talk in Wolverhampton the other evening. One could not miss it. Sadly a bit, at this time of year, the ecliptic is at quite a shallow angle to the horizon, and even worse, Venus, with a declination of about minus 27, is very close to its furthest southern declination, so it never actually gets that high in elevation. As the Sun sets, its elevation will only be about 15 degrees. But the good news is, because it's so bright, you can actually see it for at least an hour before that if it's clear. It's actually quite interesting to observe how its phase thins from about 30 to 11% during the first 3 weeks of the month, whilst its angular size increases from 38 to 53 arc seconds, so making a very thin crescent. In fact, by month's end, the phase is just 4%, and it's almost 60 arc seconds across, almost one arc minute. It's quite nice just to look at those phases of Venus, and basically make some of the observations that were made by Galileo, which enable him to show that Venus must be orbiting the Sun. Venus will actually pass in front of the Sun, which is called inferior conjunction, on the 11th of next month. Well, what about the highlights? Well, as I've said, we're hoping that Comet Ison might be the major highlight of December. It passed very close to the Sun and behind the Sun on the 28th of November. So during early December, Ison's tail may be visible in the pre-dawn sky, down to the lower left of a thin crescent moon. Saturn and Mercury, that's on the first of the month. So that'll be a lovely thing to see. Of course, we don't know how bright it's going to be. The nucleus and coma of Ison would not be visible then, but if it's produced a good tail, that could well be. So start looking for it at the very beginning of December. As the days progress, it will rise higher in the sky as dawn breaks, visible to the left of Saturn. By mid-month, shining at perhaps third magnitude, it should be visible in the east-southeast while it is still dark in the morning, that is, before we get twilight. It continues to rise higher in the pre-dawn sky, but at the same time is expected to reduce in brightness. On the 22nd of December, it passes just 5 degrees to the west of the globular cluster M13 in Hercules. As January draws closer, it becomes a circumpolar object lying towards Ursa Major. Now, it didn't brighten as much as one had hoped on its way in towards the Sun. But really, as it's a sun-grazing comet, gets very close, we have no real idea of what might happen once it's past the Sun. It could have broken up and been not much to see. It could, in fact, be very spectacular. Let's hope for the latter. There's a lunar occultation on the evening of the 11th. From about 10:05 p.m, depending a bit where you live in the UK, it's 10:07 in Edinburgh and 10:16 in London, the 4.3 magnitude star Epsilon Piscium in Pisces will be occulted by the waxing gibbous moon when it's some 30 degrees high in the southern sky. It's occulted by the dark side, the unlit side of the moon, so it's actually quite nice to see the star blink out suddenly as it becomes hidden by the dark limb. Obviously, it will reoccur on the other side of the moon later, but as that's bright, it won't be nearly so interesting to see. So that's about 10 o'clock on the 11th evening of this month. We have two meteor showers in December. Around the 14th and 15th after midnight, we have the Geminids, so called because the radiant, that's from where they appear to come from, is in Gemini. And then on December the 22nd, 23rd, we have the Ursid meteor shower, which, as you might expect, has a radiant in, actually, Ursa Minor. It's quite close to the star Kokab, which is the brightest star in Ursa Minor, which is hence the name they have. Now, this year, sadly, is not a great year for observing the Geminids, because it corresponds to a waxing gibbous moon fairly high in Aries, and that will hinder our view until rather late on in the morning. But it sets at about 5 a.m, so there might be at least 1 hour of darker skies to observe the Geminids. So perhaps get up fairly early in the morning and have a look to see if you can see them. Obviously, an observing location well away from towns or cities will pay dividends. These are relatively slow-moving meteors, and they arise from debris released by the asteroid 3200 Phaeton. That's actually unusual, because most meteor showers come from comets. The radiant, obviously in Gemini, is quite close to the bright star Castor. Again, on the night of the 22nd, 23rd, it's actually a little better, because in fact, the waning gibbous moon, waning, not waxing, is opposite in the sky to Ursa Major, will not be too obtrusive. The radiant, as I said, is in Ursa Minor. There aren't that many meteors per hour, though, perhaps 10 to 15. But sometimes, some years, there's a far higher rate when it looks as though the Earth crosses a little concentration of particles in the orbit of the comet. So it's actually well worth having a look, should it be clear. So after midnight on the 22nd, 23rd of December. So let's keep our fingers crossed for Ison, and I wish you a happy month's observing.
Thanks for that, Ian. And for our Antipodean listeners, here's John Field with the Southern Night Sky.
Kia ora, and welcome to the December Dogcast, coming to you from Carter Observatory, Wellington, New Zealand. Our evening sky is dominated in the north by the constellations of Taurus, Orion, and his two hunting dogs, Canis Major and Canis Minor. The summer Milky Way stretches through these constellations and along our southern horizon. Although not as bright as our winter Milky Way, it still exhibits the mottled glow of bright and dark regions when observed from a dark location. The bright regions are the combined light of many distant stars that form our galaxy. The dark patches are clouds of interstellar gas and dust that block the light from the more distant stars. Brighter parts of the Milky Way may be either star clusters that are resolved in binoculars and telescopes, but some bright parts, even the largest telescopes, appear as misty clouds, called nebulae, coming from the Latin word meaning cloud, and many may have stars embedded in them. One of the most famous nebulae sits in the constellation of Orion and is called M42. Orion is the mighty hunter killed by a scorpion and placed into the night sky. For Southern Hemisphere observers, Orion hangs upside down and is commonly called the cooking pot. In the north after sunset, the bottom of the pot is formed by a line of three bright stars. These are three blue giant stars ranging in distance from 700 to 1,300 light years away from us. At right and above the bottom of the pot, there is a second line of fainter stars, and this marks one of the pot's sides. The middle star of this line appears in a hazy cloud and is the Great Nebula. It is part of a much larger dark cloud of interstellar material. Binoculars and telescopes reveal more detail, and long exposure images will reveal a range of colours. Beneath the pot is a red star. This is Betelgeuse, and it marks one of the shoulders of Orion. Above the pot is a bright star Rigel, marking one of his feet. This blue-white giant star is about 900 light-years away and has a companion star that can be seen in medium-sized telescopes. To the west of Orion we find the zodiac constellation of Taurus. A distinct upside-down view of stars forms his head. The bright star Aldebaran marks one of his eyes. Sitting about 70 light years away, this giant star has a diameter of 44 times that of our Sun. The fainter stars of Taurus's head belong to a more distant cluster of stars called the Hyades. Further west is a glittering group of stars called the Pleiades that mark the bull's back. To Māori they are Matariki, the little eyes. On a clear dark night, at least 7 stars can be seen shimmering in our sky. 7x50 binoculars reveal many more. Crux, the Southern Cross, is low in the southeastern sky and an obvious dark cloud sits beside it. Called the Coalsack Nebula, it is about 600 light years away. These dark clouds can collapse under the pull of gravity and other dynamic pressures and form stars. There is another type of object visible as clouds in our southern sky. Called the Large and Small Magellanic Clouds, they are in fact satellite galaxies of our own Milky Way, about 200,000 light years away from us. The large cloud can be found not far from the bright star Canopus, and it can be seen in the southeast. The large cloud is a great target for binoculars and small telescopes for many faint star clusters and nebulae to discover. Not far from the large cloud is the Small Magellanic Cloud, and near this is a bright globular cluster, 47 Decani. Visible as a hazy star next to the SMC, binoculars reveal a golf ball shape of stars that brighten to a brilliant core. A second fainter globular cluster can be found using small telescopes close to the SMC, called NGC 362. It is nice to compare it and 47 Decani. We have 2 annual meteor showers happening during December. On the 6th of December, the Phoenicians reach their peak. With a radiant within the constellation of Phoenix, not far from Achena, this shower produces a few meters per hour, but occasionally a high rate may be seen. With this constellation high overhead, it is well placed for observing. The other meteor shower, peaking on the 14th, is the Geminids. This is one of the best meteor showers of the year, but we are not well placed for viewing it here in New Zealand. The radiant Gemini below and near to the star Castor, the lower of the 2 bright stars of Gemini. The radiant rises about 3 a.m. in the morning, and due to its low height, we only see about 50% of the meteors compared to those in the Northern Hemisphere. Due to the extended nature of this shower, viewing for a week either side of the state is worthwhile. Viewing will be further hampered by the almost full moon, which will be on the 17th. Also sitting in Gemini is the planet Jupiter. Appearing as a brilliant white star, Jupiter reveals its largest moons when viewed through binoculars. December the 21st marks the summer solstice in the southern hemisphere and marks the time of our longest daylight hours and shortest nighttime hours. The Sun had a recent increase in activity, and this may be the final burst for this cycle. The current cycle is showing up many surprises, and this cycle may be the weakest for over 40 years. And recent observations indicate that the Sun's magnetic field is in the process of flipping, and may do so over the next few weeks. Comet Ison has now left our southern skies and is hopefully putting on a good display in the Northern Hemisphere. The comet did not live up to some earlier predictions, but underwent its sudden brightening in late November to naked eye visibility. It has been a pleasure bringing you the night sky in 2013, and the team here at Carter Observatory wish you clear skies, and we look forward to another year of stargazing in 2014.